Hi, everybody, and welcome to Stories from the Midlife Crisis Dance Party. My name is Ray Serebrin, and I am the host of the Midlife Crisis Dance Party radio program on KPTZ in Port Townsend. The following is one of our story time segments that we present each week. I hope you enjoy it.
Ah, you're just in time for a story.
When the sky is dark and the moon aglow and the morning star burning from afar enters into view, all that I can say, all that I can know is that I'll be dreaming.
Sorry, we have been invaded by aliens who are now taking over the show. Today's story time is entitled True Crime on the Radio. The names in this story have been changed to protect me. I'm going to tell you about one of the most interesting people I have ever met. His name was Joe Smith. Joe Smith was, when I knew him, a chain-smoking former junkie from New York City who was heir to a vast fortune and to an even vaster reservoir of anxiety. Joe Smith had a smallish head. He had a big smile, he had bad teeth, he had pallid skin, a wisp of red hair. He was short, he was a bit bent over, and he walked somewhat like a duck, but kind of fast. And when I think back on him, I see a smiling mouth full of brown teeth and cigarette smoke curling slowly above his head. Joe Smith had lots of money. His prominent East Coast family had amassed great wealth. They were wealthy enough to mix with the super rich and to vacation with President Nixon at his Western White House in San Clemente. Joe Smith was an emotionally insecure person to begin with, but all of that money that he had warped him even further. The money made it so he could have any material thing he wanted, but what he really wanted was acceptance. Yet that was hard for him to achieve because Joe Smith was not a particularly likable man. Joe was paranoid, he was defensive, and he was quick to feel slighted, and he could be quite combative as well. He could also be dismissive in a way that made you feel like you were nothing. Joe Smith had a gift, though. He had a great ear for music, especially jazz, and he could just slightly play it, but mostly had an ear for what kind of music was well played and what was well composed and what sounded good and what music was breaking new ground. And that is how he and I found each other, through the music business. And from the moment I met him, he was deep into my life. I managed bands at the time, and to my way of thinking, I represented the most groovy and trendsetting band in Seattle. Joe Smith bought that story, partly because he liked the music, and partly because he was desperate to be involved in what he considered to be the hippest of scenes. At the time, I thought I was a very cool guy. I was exceedingly hip. I was very much in the know, to my way of thinking. I know now that my need to be seen as so cool came out of a lot of doubts and emotional insecurities. Joe Smith was also blustery and insecure, so maybe he saw in me a kindred spirit. Be that as it may, we teamed up, trying to make money and get some notoriety in the music business in Seattle. I was to supply the hip bands and the scene for him to buzz in and out of, and he was to supply the cash and let us use his van. I was quickly in debt to him for lots of money, and that was leverage in his favor in the relationship. What he didn't know was that I had something on him as well. I knew his deepest secret. I knew why he had left New York City. It turns out that Joe Smith had a disturbing biography. His story played out in New York City in 1966 and 1967 against a background of wealth and social privilege and drug use among young people in that advantaged set. It was in that milieu that Joe became a heroin addict, probably because that was what the musician friends that he cultivated were into. Then in early 1966, Joe Smith was responsible for the accidental overdose death of a pretty young woman named Jane Doe. Bob and Jane were alone in his apartment when it happened. They shot some heroin together. She began to overdose. He then shot her up with cocaine to revive her, and she died. A tortured scramble to deal with her body ensued. But first, as her corpse lay chilling next door in an air-conditioned bedroom, a frantic Joe Smith plunged deeper into addiction, shooting up continuously over the course of a week. Finally, the entire incident was exposed when Jane's body was discovered in the trunk of his car as he was trying to dispose of it. As a result, Joe Smith was sent to prison and did time in a New York correctional facility. That incident created a terrific scandal. Newspaper headlines, radio and TV stories, and ultimately someone even wrote a book about Joe's life and about the death of this young lady. And all of that brought the most unfavorable sort of notoriety down on the heads of his prominent and moneyed East Coast family. So anyway, after being convicted of this spectacular crime, Joe Smith gets out of prison and he decides to come west to escape it all the dope, the murder, but mostly the spotlight and the disgrace, and his family, of course. He had a trust fund to support him so he could afford to move far away from the glare of publicity. And where you or I might move to Tahiti or to Timbuktu, he moved to Seattle. And that's where I met him, at a little community radio station where he had put his money and his knowledge of music to use as the music director. But as I've told you before, Joe Smith could be kind of hard to get along with, and he quickly found himself at the center of personal and political conflicts at the station. Nonetheless, I let him into my little band management enterprise, and as I said, I borrowed money from him, and I was struggling to pay it back. It was my first experience in the business world, and I found myself quickly compromised by debt. I was so compromised that when it became time for the very difficult Joe Smith to be booted out of the radio station that I was by then quite involved in, I was unable to help with that and unable to speak the truth about him because I owed him a bunch of money. Nevertheless, he was ousted from the station, and I got out of the music business and got a regular job so that I could earn enough money to eventually pay him and my other debtors back. Without the music scene to connect us, Joe Smith trickled out of my life. I learned recently that he died several years ago in Massachusetts. In the end, I hope he outran his demons, and I hope that he put his money to good use. His obituary suggested making contributions in his memory to, quote, causes that improve the human condition and the world we live in. It would be a good legacy for his troubled life, I think, if people did that. I'm Ray Serebrin, and that was Stories from the Midlife Crisis Dance Party. We invite you to tune in every Thursday at 3 p.m. for more frivolity, absurdity, and melody. Thanks so much for listening.